And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Metrospective. I'm Ted Berg, joined on the line by The Athletic's Mets beat writer Tim Britton. And Tim, how was your Thanksgiving?
You know, it was pretty good, usually uneventful as usual. So I thought, you know, now that we're getting back together the week after Thanksgiving for this, I thought maybe we could rank our favorite Thanksgiving side dishes or favorite Cowboys losses on Thanksgiving Day. You know, I've got some pretty strong opinions about Leon Lett and Ron Dayne with the Broncos. So whatever you want to talk about now, you know, not much in baseball to discuss.
Was it the Don Maynard play? Was that, wait, not Don Maynard. What was that guy's name? The when Leon Lett had the ball stripped away from him as he was going into the end zone. Did that happen on Thanksgiving?
No. So Leon Lett has two amazing plays in football history, both of which are
Don Beebe.
Don Beebe of the Bills caught him in the Super Bowl as he was strutting into the end zone.
Yeah.
But on a Thanksgiving Day game in the snow in Dallas, Leon Lett, who was actually like a very good player, but was remembered for these two instances, the Cowboys blocked a game-winning field goal, and you know the ball is not live on a blocked kick, and if it's past the line
of
scrimmage,
I'm just
going to cut. Yeah, so he touched the ball. It allowed the Dolphins to recover. Pete Stojanovic kicked the game-winning field goal after it was already blocked, and the Dolphins won.
I feel like we stuck with this bit for a little too bit long. The Mets signed Max Scherzer, Tim.
So the thing is, the ball wasn't live until he touched.
Yeah.
No. The Mets signed Max Scherzer, which was unexpected, I would say.
I wasn't expecting it. I mean, you know, like a month ago or less than that, it was like no one wants to come to the Mets. They can't find a manager. They can't find a GM. They can't find a player. Like, right? Like everybody's fleeing. Syndergaard's gone. They can't sign Steven Matz, right? Like they're mad at Steven Matz's agent. Now they've signed everybody.
Yeah, you know, like on Friday, I wrote out my blueprint for what I would do if I were running the Mets, and with pitching, it just kind of dismissed the idea of signing Scherzer because I figured it was going to take 3 years and $120 million at least for them to get him to New York. And I thought, you know, if you are the Mets, you're going to make a significant investment in a pitcher in his age 35 and above season. You're going to do it for Jacob deGrom after the 2022 season. You know, what that underestimated was the Mets' capacity to lure Scherzer to New York. You know, I'm not sure how serious his, like, he wanted to be on the West Coast issue was, because I've seen, you know, Chelsea Janes of the Washington Post said it was more or less for 2021. Those were where the teams were best in LA, San Francisco,
right,
and San Diego, and it was kind of
I heard someone suggest also said that because they weren't going to trade him in the division, he wanted to go to the West Coast.
Yeah, so I think we might have, and by we, I mean like I and maybe some other reporters, I don't want to speak for them, maybe overblew the idea that he wanted to stay on the West Coast. And then the second part of it is that, you know, Scherzer, as a member of the Players Executive Subcommittee, and who's very a significant person in the Players Association in the union, it would be hard for him to turn down the most money, given that role. So even if he did want to be on the West Coast or with a specific team, if the Mets gave him a significant enough raise, he would take that. And then C, I've switched between numbers and letters here, is...
As one does, yeah.
Is that, you know, we don't know what Steve Cohen's limit is, you know? We don't know if you know, I think I was operating under the... You know, I did the baseball, the Athletics baseball show labor podcast last week, and Lindsay Adler asked me, like, you know, how much do the Mets need to spend? And I said, I can see them running a payroll of $250 million in 2022. And they're now at 270. They are above that. Right. And even when I did the kind of blueprint for them, I was like, oh, they're going to go beyond 250 if they're really trying to build a winning team. And, you know, for 2023, you know, if DeGrom opts out, like, maybe they go to $300 million. Like, Steve Cohen can afford that, obviously. We don't know what the penalties will be for it. The penalties weren't harsh under the current system, but teams adhered to them anyway. So, you know, just kind of like Mean Girls, the limit does not exist here.
Yeah, can we just talk about how much better the team got in the last 4 days or whatever it was? Just the, it's a funny thing. Like, now it's not even December yet. We're talking on Tuesday morning, November 30th, and they're not done, right? They're not done. There's going to be more moves this offseason. It seems like there's just some like roster imbalances that are going to need to get worked out, but. Like, even in some hypothetical world where, like, now lockdown starts and it doesn't come out until opening day and there's no more moves, like, this is a pretty good team. And, like, and the players they added, not just Scherzer. Like, Scherzer in a rotation that hopefully includes Jacob DeGrom, a healthy Jacob DeGrom, pushing, like, Taijuan Walker, Carlos Carrasco, Tyler McGill down the depth chart a little bit. That's the best 1-2 punch in baseball if they're healthy, right? That's a no doubter. And then, you know, on the offensive side of things, obviously they're not as big deals, but they added Mark Canha and Eduardo Escobar and Starling Marte, all on fairly short deals, which I think is something you suggested they should do earlier in this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, just kind of if you're gonna go over the luxury tax, like go with high dollar amounts for shorter term, you know, don't spread out the risk over because that's zagging where the rest of the industry is zigging in terms of giving, you know, DJ LeMahieu 6 years and $90 million and right. Bryce Harper 13 years and $325 million. Be willing to pay the higher AAV. That's going to get you more players and it's going to limit your long term risk. Like we've talked about with the Mets, there's probably no bad 1 year deal really for them. You know, that goes back to the Syndergaard mess. But with a guy like Scherzer, like I would rather have him on the 3 year deal he has that they gave him for 43.3 a year than like 4 years at, 35 or something like that to lower the AAV. I think the way they've done it is probably better for them long term financially. This is all like in the weeds stuff. What I wrote for The Athletic this morning was like, let's not get too in the weeds on something like this right away. Right. We'll have months, weeks at least to do that during the lockout and the roster implications of it. Like, just appreciate, like, the Mets got Max Scherzer. They got the best pitcher on the free agent market in a way they haven't in who knows how long. It's really exciting to imagine Scherzer and DeGrom at the top of the rotation. The team, sometimes, like, the best way to go about building your team is to locate the best player, the guy that everyone knows is the best player, and sign him. And that's what the Mets did here.
And Scherzer is just, you know, and he's 37 years old, and it's a huge contract for a starting pitcher, and everybody knows about the warnings about that. But Scherzer's a Hall of Famer. He has had, knock wood, very few health issues. Like, it feels like maybe he's not going to give you 210 innings next year, but it feels like you can kind of count on Scherzer for, 170 innings as a 37-year-old, which is something they need desperately, just the innings. But then, with Scherzer, they're elite quality innings. And that's something really special, too. We talked all about, if you're going into the season with Dom Smith and J.D. Davis and Jeff McNeil penciled into your lineup, then you didn't add enough depth. Now, bringing in three viable everyday major league players, one in Marte, I think, is a star. I think he's been one of the most underrated players in baseball for a decade, basically. Canha and Escobar, just both like very steadily capable players with some defensive flexibility. It means that those other guys, and you know, I don't expect Smith, McNeil, and Davis to all be on the opening day roster. I think that's one of those imbalances that they're going to work out. But it means that two of those guys most likely are on your bench any given night, and that's good. That means you do have some depth when you're healthy.
And you know, when guys hit the injured list, like, you're bringing in that type of talent rather than Cameron Maben off the scrap heap to play center field for you, mm-hmm. or even guys like, you know, Jhenasree Vargas and Mason Williams. Like, we saw how deep the Mets had to go to field an everyday roster in late May and early June last season. So that's one of the reasons, like, you know, they've got guys like Davis, Smith, and McNeil. We're recording this as reports are emerging that the Tigers and Javi Baez have come to a deal. So Baez would not be coming back to the Mets. And the other infielders they could sign are a pretty big drop off from that, unless it's Chris Bryant. Mm-hmm. So, you know, McNeil might be part of the everyday lineup. You know, Robinson Cano, who knows what to read into his role. There might be a DH. So I don't think the Mets need to be in a rush. I don't think they need to trade any of those guys, McNeil, Smith, or Davis.
Right.
I think if the right opportunity comes along, if a team values those players more than you do, which is, if a team says, we want Dominic Smith to be our everyday first baseman, we think he can really excel as an everyday first baseman, and we will trade you a package commensurate with that feeling, then the Mets should listen. But I don't think they need to go out and say, okay, we're going to trade Dominic Smith. What's the best we can get? I think there are two different approaches there, and I would take the first one, where, you know, if Dominic Smith, JD Davis, and Jeff McNeil are on the opening day roster together, it's not a bad outcome for the Mets, because I think certainly McNeil and Smith you would expect to have better years than they did last year, and Davis had actually a nice year when he played and when he was healthy, and whether he could do that for a longer period of time is the question.
And you mentioned, you know, not the uncertainty, and I think we all expect there will be a designated hitter for the National League come the start of the season, but it's still not set in stone, and so that is obviously going to be a huge factor in how they go with Smith and Davis both, because that, you know, I think that you'd use Smith at first base and Alonso as a DH on plenty of nights, but that basically becomes your DH tandem, you know, at least in terms of the players that are inserted the lineup probably, and so that's something they're going to think about. I'm not trying to say I'm not trying to say they should trade these people, just to clarify. I think that you listen, right? And if the best deals you're getting are on JD Davis, then you make the deal with JD Davis. And if the best, you know, if you're getting the most for Jeff McNeil, who's worth a little bit more to them, you know, to the Mets because of his versatility. But again, like, if it's a solid starting pitcher, if it's a bullpen ace, if it's, you know, there's so many, there's other holes on this team. And so, these deals they've made give them the flexibility to patch some of those via trade. Do you think, and I'm disappointed about Baez going to the Tigers, but, you know, you can't say, oh, the Mets aren't spending money, right? So there's only so disappointed you can be in a team that has signed Max Scherzer. I think they probably could use, like you said, like another bat. I don't think there's a chance they sign Bryant, right? Are we done with big acquisitions now?
You know, I think I would be surprised if they signed another big acquisition between now and midnight Wednesday night, which is when a lockout would get put into place. I'd be, you know, that they signed two outfielders in Canna and Marte. I thought it'd be more interesting if they added an additional, you know, they've signed two outfielders and an infielder. If they had signed two infielders and an outfielder, like, McNeil's versatility, I think, would have been more interesting there. I think it's harder in the current setup of the roster for him to not be an infielder full-time. I don't think there's as much room in the outfield for him. Although, you know, if Cano can come back and play a decent second base, which, again, is who knows, that could help give them more of that. But, yeah, outside of Bryant, you know, it's kind of, you're looking at, you know, Kyle Seager is probably the next part down the list in terms of an infielder, unless you spin a trade with you know, a team like Cincinnati for a pitcher and you take on a contract like an Eugenio Suarez or a Mike Moustakas. Those guys would be on the infield. That's kind of the options you're looking at, or Jonathan Villar, bringing him back. But I think Escobar kind of fills that versatile role as a member even of the everyday lineup. So I think they've got options in how they go about it. I think, you know, like I mentioned in the story last week, and we've talked about, like, their best offensive chance, like what's going to be important for them offensively is that players that are already on the roster stay healthier and rebound. And that's, you know, Onimo is there for longer than half the season, that Lindor has a much better season than he had in 2021, that McCann has a better season than he had in 21, that Smith, McNeil, Davis, that they get some contribution, some higher level of contribution out of those guys than they did last year. That's what's going to drive the offense being a lot better, you know, as much as the additions of Marte, Canna, and Escobar.
And you know, I mean, it goes without saying, but they need Jacob DeGrom to be healthy, you know, and I think that adding Scherzer means they have a chance to contend without DeGrom. But I think if DeGrom is healthy, then you look at this team right now and you say, okay, that's the favorite in the NL East.
Yeah, you know, we talked about at the end of the season that one thing I underestimated was like the psychological impact of not having Jacob DeGrom every fifth day that a bunch of players talked about in late September, that there was just kind of an ease that he gives you the day he's on the, you know, it's not just the day he's on the mound where you expect to win more than you do on other days because he's the best pitcher in the game, but it's also like the night before, you know, the bullpen can be used differently. The night after, the bullpen
can
be used differently.
Yeah, like if you're Miguel Castro and Jacob DeGrom is pitching, like you put your feet up and have a hot dog, right? Because you're not going to, you know, they don't need a sixth inning guy when DeGrom's pitching.
And one thing that was interesting was one pitcher mentioned that, like, you can see the way the other team approaches at-bats was different the day before and after DeGrom start. It's like, he's like, you know, the day before DeGrom starts, they're all trying to get their hits then because they know they're not getting them the next day. And then the day after, they're all screwed up from having faced him. So it's like the whole
just demoralized. Everybody's just like, yeah.
You're pitching better because you're coming before or after Jacob DeGrom. I have not looked statistically too deeply into that. I did notice that Marcus Stroman's ERA was slightly, I mean, it was like a 0.1 or 0.2 runs better when he faced the same team after DeGrom. He's the guy who did it most last year. But
And you see also like the day after they're all like walking up, like doing the Charlie Brown walk and muttering to themselves because they've just had to face Jacob DeGrom.
Right. It's just, he puts you into a slump as a hitter when you have to face him two or three times. So having that guy back for 6 months, and even if it's not Jacob DeGrom with a ERA that starts with zero the way it was for most of the first half of the season, if it's merely, you know, Jacob DeGrom with a 2.2 ERA, like, heaven forfend. But I think the Mets would take that.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yeah, I think that Jacob DeGrom, I think that if you can get 150 innings out of DeGrom next year, like, is that unreasonable to hope for? But I think if that was the deal on the table for me, like, if someone said, would you sign up for 150 innings from Jacob DeGrom and ideally, you know, health going into October, like, absolutely sign me up for that. Like, I don't think you can really, after the season he had this year and all the weird injuries and the way they sort of piled up on him, I think it would be unfair to expect much more than that.
Yeah, you know, it's because it's not just that he threw under 100 innings this year. It's that, you know, the 2020 season was shorter, so he threw right. Only about 67 or so that year. So, you know, he doesn't have the innings base that he's used to having going into a year. The Mets have said, dating back to the end of the season, that, you know, they expected not only DeGrom to have a regular spring training, but for him to have a regular offseason because he was able to build himself back up and get to just about pitching shape by the end of the season, and that, you know, if they were playing for something more meaningful, or if the season had gone on just a little bit longer, he would have been able to pitch in regular season games. So, you know, their thought is that he is kind of a full go come next season. But I do think, you know, for him and for pitchers in general, we saw the way the Mets handled certain pitchers this past year. They were a bit more careful with them. You know, a guy like Stroman, who didn't throw 100 plus pitches too often. I think he only did it once or twice. That they were, you know, a little bit more cautious with him than they would have otherwise been, because he was coming off a year where he didn't pitch. I think we'll see them take that approach with DeGrom. They'll probably take that approach with Scherzer as well, considering his age. It wouldn't surprise me if we saw them mix in a sixth starter on occasion. I thought that was something they'd probably do if Syndergaard were part of the rotation. But, you know, you're going to be more cautious with all of your starters because of the unknown of what they're coming off of the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, if you're, you know, they talk about becoming Dodgers East, it's something the Dodgers didn't do a ton of in 2021. They got really good help from Walker Buehler and Julio Urias. But, you know, we've seen the Dodgers be so cautious with their starting pitchers and so quick trigger with the 10-day DL and the so-called phantom DL that they like to use. And I think if you're playing well and you can get yourself a lead in the division, and it's not like, you know, every start is a do or die thing for guys like Scherzer and DeGrom, then, like, you know, why not, you know, give them a 10-day break somewhere in there when you know, when some tiny little thing acts up, because there's always tiny little things acts up, and you know, you have to have that fight with DeGrom and Scherzer, because they're those types of dudes. But you know, keeping everybody healthy for the full season, and especially keeping everybody healthy for October, means, you know, sometimes you have to prioritize the end of the season over somewhere in June, July. And yeah, I would like to see them handle with care their two aces now.
Yeah, and I think that's where having more starting depth is necessary for mm-hmm. them. Every team is going to be talking about starting depth from here through eternity. But, you know, when you've got guys like McGill and Peterson, who have options, who have done a decent job in the major leagues when they've been there, but, you know, who aren't, like, locked down guaranteed major league starters yet at this point in their career, if you can start them as your sixth and seventh starters, if you can have Jordan Yamamoto as your eighth. You know, the Mets have an interesting decision Tuesday with Trevor Williams, whether they tender him a contract in arbitration or not, and let him go as another guy who could be depth, though he'd probably have to stay in the major leagues because otherwise he can leave. So I think, you know, having those guys as your depth starters rather than, like, we, you know, the guy who's become the punching bag for it in 2021 was Jared Eichhoff. You know, having those guys come up to make those fill-in starts for you makes it a little easier. That's what the Dodgers have been so good at, is, you know, having guys like Dustin May and Tony Gonsolin and David Price as their backup starters. Yeah. That's where the luxury really comes in.
Yeah, I would not have guessed I would say this as of, like, early May, but they're really going to miss Joey Lucchese, right? Like, and you look, you know, I feel like they could, and again, like, it's, you know, they just signed Max Scherzer and three really good, you know, viable everyday major league players. Like, I'm not trying to be, I'm not trying to take a mile here. But, like, I feel like they could use one more starter, right? Is that wrong that to think they could, like, even if it's, because if you look at the list of free agents now, John Gray is gone. Like, they're flying off the board. So that mid-tier, you know, other than Marcus Stroman, who's still out there, who I'd love to see back, but at least from what it sounds like on his own Twitter account, it doesn't seem likely at this point. But even if it means, like, a Rich Hill, you know, someone who is just a another arm for that mix, I think would be a big get at this point.
Yeah, I kind of looked at the starting pitchers in three tiers. There's, like, the A tier, which was the long term deals for guys like Gausman, Stroman, Robbie Ray. The B tier was kind of those middle guys and like John Gray, like you mentioned, Carlos Rodon. Anthony DeSclafani, Steven Matz, those guys who came off the board pretty quickly, Eduardo Rodriguez. And then the C tier is kind of like the 1 or 2 year deals for guys that could work out for you. So that's, you know, Rich Hill, I think, is a really good example of that, probably only signing a 1 year deal. You know, Michael Pineda might be a 1 or 2 year deal. Danny Duffy from Kansas City, those guys who like they could work. You don't know that they're going to work. Scherzer, by the way, was in a tier all to himself. He was like tier A, right. A prime, whatever.
Well, he was with, I think Verlander was in that tier briefly, yes. Too, but he just came off the board soon. Yeah.
So I think, you know, because they got Scherzer, they don't need to be shopping in tiers A or B. I think they can look more at C and, you know, try to find kind of this year's version of Taiwan Walker, where it's a shorter term deal. If, you know, if you want to go after someone who's a little younger, maybe that is Duffy. I actually don't know how old he is. Dylan Bundy, I think, is under 30 and would make sense that in that regard. Like those types of pitchers where you hope, it, you know, you feel like there's a they're going to give you innings at the very least. And maybe they hit maybe you hit some upside there.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Rodon. So Carlos Rodon has not signed yet, correct?
Correct.
And that's an intriguing name to me, just because he was so good when he was healthy in 2021. It's sort of the opposite, I think, of what they need, because what they need is innings, like not this upside play that I think Rodon is. But it just looks like there's still so much upside there, and maybe like some of that is me sort of clinging to prospect hype. But no, I mean he. He struck out 185 batters in 132 and two-thirds innings in 2021. Like that's real, real good. He obviously made some, you know, massive change between his early career and last season. So that's an intriguing name to me. But I think I think we're on the same page that one more guy might be a useful thing here.
Yeah, I mean, if they're willing to pay for it, Rodon, I think Rodon is just going to cost a little bit more than guys like Hill, yeah, and Pineda and Bundy. I'd be
on guess what?
With that,
it's Steve Cohen now. Yeah, it's Steve Cohen now. There's no cost too much money anymore. That's not a thing anymore. We don't talk about that.
This isn't a video game where you go in and you've got a set budget where you have to figure out exactly how it all fits under a budget. So I'm not sure what Rodon's market would be like. I think it's funny because the pitchers, there's been so much activity in the starting pitching market. The pitchers who haven't signed, it's kind of like, well, what's wrong with them? Like, why hasn't Marcus Stroman signed yet? You know, why hasn't the market heated up for Carlos Rodon? It's still November 30th. It's tough for everyone to sign this quickly. So I think, you know, those guys might have some leverage when you come, if they don't sign by Wednesday night. When you come back from the lockout, when teams have kind of figured out what the new rules are and what they want to do, it might be beneficial to be one of the better starting pitchers left out on the market at that point.
Well, that brings up our question for the week. And this comes from John Pace, who wants to know, he got at me at Twitter to ask, and this is an interesting question. He says, can trades occur during the lockout? We're just all sort of assuming there's a lockout come December 1st. And we don't know how long it'll last, but we assume it'll be kind of a while. That's at least what the feeling in the air for sure. So John asks, can trades occur during the lockout? I assume not, since that would involve players' involvement by having to take physicals. But do you have any idea? I don't have any idea, Tim. Do you?
My assumption here is that they are not permitted in a formal fashion. Like, you're not going to hear on December 5th, like, the Mets have traded X for Y. But I don't know that there's anything preventing teams from working it out so that they can say, when the lockout ends, we'll give you X for Y. And you know, the lockout ending on February 3rd and on February 4th, there being 15 different trades announced across Major League Baseball.
I was thinking like 70, right? Like a Jerry DePoto field day. Like there's just a whole new Mariners team that day.
I mean, it's interesting to think of what a guy like DePoto can get up to when he has like nothing else to do. Is just like toying around with like, can I trade every player on the roster and build an entirely new team? It's almost too bad that the Mariners are like in a competitive spot, that he can't do that, or that it wouldn't be wise to do that. If the Mariners were like coming off a 65 and 97 season, be like, maybe Jerry DePoto can make 25 different trades with his 26 man roster.
That's what I mean. I'm rooting for a flurry. I think that will be. I imagine you're rooting against that. I would imagine if I were. if I were writing about baseball on a day-to-day basis, that would be a nightmare. But as someone who's able to watch the wheels spin a little bit, like, man, would that be cool.
I'm interested in this, your perspective as more of a fan at this point. Like, what do you the way free agency has operated really since Friday, with kind of a bevy of early signings, has made people think like, oh, we should have a free agency deadline, or it should operate more the way the NBA does with free agency, where it's like all done within 5 days. How would you like that as a fan? As a reporter, I would probably prefer that because it makes the rest of the offseason a lot easier.
You can go on vacation.
Right. You can worry. But I feel like as a fan, you know, I'm a very, very casual fan of the NBA. So like, I don't pay attention to free agency. It's just kind of like, by the time the playoffs start next spring, I'll be like, oh, that guy's on that team now. And to me, as a fan, that's too much in too little a time. I want some middle ground between that, but I don't know what your perspective is.
I haven't thought it all the way through. I don't hate the idea of a deadline. I do think it's like really exciting, and it's something, you know, I think I'm such a big baseball fan that I'm rooting for baseball, and like I can see how that is the type of thing that might draw off-season attention in a way that baseball tends not to. But it has my off-season attention already, and I kind of like that at, you know, like on a normal off-season that it might be January 14th, and like, here's this, now the team made this huge deal, and like, or this, you know, everybody's waiting for Bryce Harper to sign until spring training starts. Like, that's a bad example. That was sort of an unfortunate thing, but I like the uncertainty of it to some extent, and it does, like, I have found in recent seasons, especially like with the flurry of trade deadline activity, then I am in that spot where, like you watching the NBA, where I'm watching a non-Mets baseball game, and you're like, wait, this guy's on this team? Like, I had no idea, you know, like, because there's so many deals that you miss a bunch. But I don't know. Like, a part of me says, like, if I weren't doing this so regularly, maybe I'd like to just, like, bury my head for the entire offseason and come up on the first day of spring training and to see who the Mets have.
I'm still trying to figure out what happened between DeAndre Jordan and the Mavericks like 8 years ago. It's just, to me, like, there's so much that can happen in a short period. You know, like, I feel like as a reporter, because the Mets signed Scherzer on Monday, that I haven't given like full attention to the additions they made on Friday, especially the Marte one. Like, that, because that was
a
very
big one. That's
very late Friday. And you know, like, I will get to those now, especially because we have a prolonged period of probably no activity from a player perspective. The Mets will have to hire a manager and a coaching staff, and they can do that during the lockout. But that will be the time to, like, look back and be like, hey, remember, like, 3 weeks ago the Mets signed Starling Marte? Let's examine that. And that's just, it's a different approach than what we're certainly used to in this sport.
Can we examine that very, very briefly, just to say, first of all, as you mentioned, I think it's great that they haven't put any time into hiring a manager or coaching staff yet. Like, if you can do that during the lockout, then, like, by all means, that's a great use of that time. You can really, really take your time interviewing managers once the lockout starts. Like, sign some free agents while you can. And also, like, I mean, the Marte signing is so overshadowed by Scherzer now. That was one of the best, like, because the Mets had a need in center field, right? Or the outfield in general, and a need for a defensive upgrade. And like, Marte, I think at this point, isn't an elite defensive center fielder, but he's a solid defensive center fielder, and that means you can kick Nimmo to a corner. And I think Nimmo is going to be a very rangy corner outfielder. And so, you know, yeah, it's not having the Gold Glover in center, but I think, you know, you're still covering a lot more ground in the outfield, and that makes me very excited as well.
Yeah, I think
I love Marte. Like, he's just a player I've always enjoyed playing. Like, it's such a, you know, again, we're talking about Max Scherzer mostly because he's Max Scherzer, and Starling Marte is not a Hall of Famer, but Marte's a great player.
And the best base runner in baseball last season by any metric. And the Mets, as we discussed, not very good on the bases. So to have a guy with that not just the ability to steal bases, but to take the extra base and be more aggressive on the base pass successfully in Marte is going to be fun to watch. And I think their outfield defense as a whole, Ken Rosenthal wrote about this late Friday into Saturday. You know, Canna is a guy who can play some center field, and I know his numbers were down in 2021, but has a reasonable track record as an outfield defender. Nimmo, you would think, would be better in left, like his outs above average would improve in a corner if he's playing left versus center. I'm not sure if between Canna and Nimmo, if they've got left field, right field preferences. Nimmo's arm is not the strongest for right field. I actually don't know about Canna's. Marte has a terrific arm in center. You know, you've got that, and you've got three guys there who can play center, and that's really nice to have, because that's one of those spots that's really hard to fill. You know, center field, catcher, and shortstop, I guess. So the three positions, like, if a guy gets hurt, you can't just throw anyone there. And we've seen that hurt the Mets in the past. It hurt the Mets in center last year, hurt the Mets at catcher a few years back when Plawecki and Darnold both got hurt right at the same time. So having depth at those positions and starter level depth at those positions is really important. And so the Mets have that now in center with, you know, if Marte goes down, they can put Nimmo there. If Marte and Nimmo go down, they can put Canna there. If all three go down, you may be able to put Khalil Lee there. Like, they can get by in center in a way that they weren't able to last
Plummer,
year.
And Plummer, the guy they just got too.
Oh yeah, Nick Plummer, who they signed from the Cardinals. He was a minor league free agent they gave a major league deal to. And a guy who, again, younger, has a chance to grow into something more than he's shown so far.
He was terrific in the minors last year. Last point before we go, have you dealt with Mark Canna at all in your, I know you've been on beats other than the Oakland A's beat. What do you know about Mark Canna?
So I have gotten a couple texts saying that he is a terrific individual, a great guy to talk to.
A gem.
As I told you offline, I've always kind of, I think it's the sideburns and the fact that he played for the A's. I when he first came up and first came to my attention, I really thought he was Australian. He is not Australian. It's just because he played with Liam Hendricks that makes me think that, I think.
No, and the name, Mark Canna. So Mark Canna, I can't do it. I'm not going to do an Australian accent. But you can imagine, like, Steve Irwin saying, rest in peace, saying Mark Canna. Mark Canna became notable to me. If you look back to he had a huge game in his big league debut in 2015. And afterwards, when they went to talk to him in his big league debut, he pulls this. He just did the entire set of cliches from Bull Durham that Kevin Costner teaches Tim Robbins in the post-game interview, which is just like, I just think that's so cool. Like, to have the chutzpah to do that on your first day in the major leagues is so awesome, especially with the razor sharp sideburns, which you mentioned. And then he's got a food Instagram going. He eats well, you know, stays healthy. Obviously, a lot of his food is toward the healthy side, but loves to venture out and eat, and is a great. Since Travis Snyder has been out of the league, I think Mark Canna has really become like the league's premier food Instagrammer. And that is something I really appreciate. I haven't dealt with him a ton. I've talked to him a few times, like while covering the A's in spring training, but I kind of feel like he's got, if things go well for Mark Canna, both the media and the fans are really going to like him.
Yeah, it's at Big League Foodie, hitting dingers and crushing food along the way. That's that sounds like your type of guy.
He is. I'm trying to like draw a comp. Because he's got like the right like sort of new school attitude. Like he's gonna flip a bat when it's necessary. He's had some really triumphant bat flips, a positive dude too. It's a very limited experience I have in dealing with him, but I think that people are going to like that guy. I think people are going to like all these guys. I think this is a fun series of signings. The Mets have Max Scherzer on the team, Tim. Max Scherzer.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Canna, Escobar has a great reputation as a teammate. Teammates have loved him in Minnesota and Arizona. Marte, I think, I haven't heard, like, I haven't gotten texts about how great a person he is, but I've, you know, I think he has a pretty strong reputation as a teammate. Scherzer obviously has that reputation as well. So, you know, as much as the Mets said, like, you know, we love our clubhouse chemistry back in July, I think they are looking to upgrade that camaraderie in the room a little bit more this offseason. It seems like these signings take them in that direction.
Tim, I want to end there. Will we ever talk again? Because it seems like there's a lockout coming.
Yeah, we're not allowed to talk during a lockout, I think. I think that's the not rule, true. is that we can't discuss anything. We can get together, but we have to discuss non-baseball topics.
We haven't talked books in a long time.
That's
so
true.
So, you know, we could just have like a couple of books podcasts in December.
Well, we'd have to come up with a better title for the Metrospective at that point.
We've got time.
I was putting you on the spot to see how quickly you could think of a book related pun, because I could not.
I can't, The Naturals.
The Hamletrospective. I don't know.
That's a play. At some point we will be back to talk about the Mets and probably to talk about the lockout and to talk about, you know, whatever flurry of moves they've still yet to make before this December 1st deadline. But until that point, Tim, peace out.
Adios.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.